It's 8:46 on the clock. Let's call to order the Gage County Board of Supervisors regular meeting Wednesday, March 19th. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Open Meeting Act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation, Juergens, Hill, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byer, Sitzer. Next on the agenda is a consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes of the meeting held March 5th, 2014, approval of all claims through March 19th, 2014, in the amount of $442,659.39. Approval placed on follow all correspondence received. Approve reappointing Steve Norton. Address is 1320 Doyle Lane, Beatrice, Nebraska, for another term of the Gage County Veterans Committee to expire July 2019. Approve report of Register of Deeds for the month of February 2014. Approve Teresa Faber as caretaker for Stark Pioneer Cemetery for 2014. Receive and approve the annual LEPC report to the State Emergency Response Commission, Homestead and the Homestead LEPC. Those are items 1 through 8 on the consent agenda. I need a motion to accept them or have something considered separately.
I would move to approve the consent agenda.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Seconded by Lytle. Discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Next, as part of the regular agenda, would be comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Anybody here? Yes, Lisa.
I just have something briefly just to give you an update on what you're going to hear this weekend. Gage County Ag Society is supporting the Spring Nationals this weekend. We have over 143 cars just pre-registered. 11 different states as far as Minnesota, Colorado, Wisconsin. So when you see the lights out there for the next 4 days, you'll know, and the roaring in town, please feel welcome to come out and enjoy the races. Hotels are all full. We've sent everybody extra to Crete and to Fairbury, and I'm hearing lots of reports that they're also full. We'll be offering camping and so forth out there too. So again, inviting everybody to come on down, and we hope that the grandstands will be full and the weather will be favorable for us. So, and thank you for giving us the grounds to be able to do that with. So, questions, let me know or call. Thank you.
Are you driving this weekend?
Huh?
Are you driving this weekend?
Am I driving? Yeah, a little S10 1996 pickup will get me to and from. But
no number on the side?
No number on the side, no. So, thanks.
Thanks, Lisa. Any other comments from the public, requests for future agenda items? I'm going to jump the agenda here since we got a full house, and Lorene continues to hide back there. And I don't know why she's doing that, because you're not going to get away. We want to present Lorene Stein.
They're going to run and get my office.
Oh, yeah, go get them.
I thought you were going to be getting meetings first.
Well,
go ahead and hit them.
Come forward.
She thought we'd actually follow the agenda.
We've been to enough of these meetings, we're kind of all over the place.
Okay, ready?
Do that before, haven't you? Oh, goodness. Are they coming?
I hear them.
Lori went home. They should be there.
They're just a very quiet group. Yeah.
Davies with the assessor's office now, too. What else you got any guys doing?
Hanging in the fire drill, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, they all burn. They don't hide in the back. This is your fellow employee. Don't hide in the back.
That's all right.
All right. Well, it seems like just a small token of appreciation, this little 10 by 11 wooden plaque, for all the effort and time that you've given to the citizens of Gage County. But today we are recognizing Lorene Stein in appreciation of almost 35 years of service to Gage County and the citizens. Looks like in the assessor's office starting July 16th, 1979. That was before cell phones. All the phones actually had cords at that point.
That's right.
As we talk communications later. So, and then March 28th will be your last day of 2014. So presented this day to you in appreciation by the Gage County Board of Supervisors. So,
thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll hand this to you in just a moment, but do you have any words you'd like to...
You knew I did, didn't you?
She's got a whole sheet.
I'm prepared. I was going to tell you that when I started back in 1979, I never dreamt that I would make it through six assessors. Our office has gone through doing tax notices with a big machine that when we put the dollar amount in, it clunked and rocked our floor to being totally computerized now. We would spend months typing up those notices and almost falling asleep as we proofread them for mistakes. We have gone from counting dots to see how many acres a farmer had to do in our current GIS system. Working here all these years with my coworkers, they do become family to me. I do believe I have spent almost more time with them than I did with my own family. Anyway, they have helped me through two pregnancies, two broken ankles, numerous surgeries, and a small bout of cancer. For those wonderful coworkers, I do thank them. As for the county board, people have come and people have gone, but Danny, I do believe you were here when I started, and look, you're still here. Anyway, everything has a beginning and an end, and the timing to end this chapter of my life seems right to me. I know that I will miss my coworkers in Gage County, but I am excited to ride off into the sunset and do who knows what. I wish you all the best, and thank you for the plaque and for letting me spend 34-plus years with this county. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the board, since you give him a hard time, we'll let him.
On behalf of the Gage County Board, we present this to you and thank you for everything that you have done, in spite of giving me a terrible time for many years. Thank you, Lorene, very, very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Committee reports. Building and grounds, winter lights.
Nothing.
Equalization.
Nothing.
Finance and insurance.
Finance, we did talk about with our communications, but financing that maybe, knowing that a cost is $800,000 plus. We had quite a bit of conversation on the fact that how much do we finance with a bank or NACO, and how much do we use inheritance for or whatever. So threw out several different ideas and came to the conclusion that we don't have to have that decided yet, because we haven't exactly picked a system. But generally the comments were use a fair amount out of inheritance. Then we don't have to finance it. We're not strapping the budget in future years for 3 or 5 years or however long and stuff. So welcome to more feedback yet as we go forward with this and make our decision. But like I said, generally the comments were to use inheritance for a good part of this. So.
And what's the balance of inheritance? The reason we had that discussion, I think, is because the balance is almost $3 million.
The last that we got from Lori was $2.932 million in the inheritance fund. And that has increased. It basically doubled this year in inheritance. Not saying what it's going to happen going forward, but we also did have the conversation that we know the Hickory Road project. We've been working on that for years, and that will be one source of revenue for Hickory Road going forward. And then also we've had conversation of our jail facility over there and what to do with that in the coming years. We know there's some costs or some projects that we're looking at, and how do we fit them all in the budget? How do we use inheritance, and how do we make that all work? So,
anything else from Myron? Finance Committee, anybody else? Comments? Human Resource, Employee Relations, you want to come back to you later?
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's just fine.
You just got a little thing we need to do, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Law Enforcement, Emergency Management.
I'm going to defer to later in the meeting here when we discuss communications, because that was the main item that we discussed the other morning.
Okay. Philly North project, we've talked about it quite a bit, but the pole relocation is done. Asphalt crew's been busy the last 2 weeks. Weather's been good for crack sealing, so they used basically 54 boxes of filler, which is a large amount, so that's something that's necessary in the spring. This is the time of year you want to do it. Now to the bad news, I guess. International dump truck we purchased. We had a little issue with it last winter, even as far as back, I think it was in January sometime. Initially, the brakes locked up, causing a problem in the rear end. Make a long story short, we got a total repair bill on that truck for $8,326, which, when it was taken to International in Lincoln, they could find nothing wrong, no reason for the accident whatsoever. So I guess we're stuck with that one. Problems with a cat motor grader, another bill of $7,772. Bad O-ring and oil pump. It's been a practice. The county has hauled bridge plank and other things at the Scott Street and Ellis Road corner, and when the conditions are right, we would burn those planks. Have had numerous complaints, so the decision was made from now on all that material would be hauled to the landfill. It's going to be another extra cost, but there's enough problems. There could be enough problems out there with contamination things right by the stream. We decided we're going to stop using that method. And last but not least, I think everybody's got this list. Galen, we've been talking about striping the roads. We know the condition of the roads, the paint striping on them, is someplace non-existent. So Galen went out throughout the county and gave us a list of the most important ones, the first 40 miles that were basically non-existent and no striping on them. We have that list here, and Galen had budgeted in this year's budget approximately $32,000. We're going to, if we went through with this full 40 miles, it's going to cost approximately $40,000. We felt the need was great enough that we better go ahead and do these first 40 and get those done. So we're looking at about $960 a mile to do this project. So he's going to go ahead and give estimates out and get all these miles done, hopefully by, when was the date, Galen?
June 2nd.
Okay. And basically talked about rock and gravel bids and culvert work again, so I think that was about the gist of it. Anything else?
I'll just say on the paint striping, these are miles not included in the bond in our overlay. In our bond that we're doing this summer, the paint striping for those was included in the price of the of the bids for those companies, or for constructors or whatever. So those will be done also. So we'll, with these 40 and those 29, we're almost getting half of our miles paint striped this year.
You'll also be doing the one that gets armor coated in the summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Striped.
It's something that, how many years since we've done that, Galen? I just guess.
I'm going to say since 08.
Yeah, so it's been a while. We've kind of neglected that. So it's something we'll try and get caught up on.
Questions for Gary? No. Just since we're there, we're going to move forward here real quick and do accept or reject an award rock and gravel bids. I need a motion to accept, reject, and or award those bids.
I make a motion to accept all bids.
Moved by Terry.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Discussion.
Everybody should have this gravel bid section. On the yellow indicates the low bid. Adams Township, actually the low bid is from Western Sand and Gravel, just for that one township. And the rest of the low bids on gravel are from Consolidated Sand and Gravel. So the once again we're tied mostly in one pit here because of locations that are left to haul from. Also low bids in the hauling are from Rock On for Consolidated and from the Alexander pit if we have to move that far. There's been I've heard that with the big volume of gravel that's going to be used on these road projects, ours included as well as the state's, the pits are going to be real busy because there's a large amount of material have to be hauled for the overlay projects in Gage County this year. So we'll get what we can, but it's going to be tight. It's going to be hard getting all the gravel that we've said we're going to use. So,
more discussion or questions for Terry? Any more requests for answers and solutions to the gravel problem?
Don't have any.
All right, we have a motion and a second. No further discussion. Vote 7-0. Next, we've got several presentations here, but we have a new person in the room that we'd like to introduce here, and then if he wants to hang out and hear all the other stuff we have going on, maybe we'll have the sheriff introduce our new county employee for his office.
Good morning. Today, I have one of my newest employees with me. This is Brian Davidson. He will be the new Special Services Sergeant. His duties will be mainly right here at the courthouse for security and the courts. Many of you probably know Brian. He used to be Chief Police in Wymore for 17 years, I believe it was.
That's correct.
And then he had a career in law enforcement in Kansas in what, a couple different agencies?
Yes, yeah. Over 30 years.
See, over 30 years. So he's a veteran officer. He's a seasoned officer is what I was looking for this position. So I think he'll do very well. I've had a lot of positive response from the courthouse already. And so I look forward to working with Brian, helping me get some things in place here and with the board and my committee. I'm going to try to have a little get-together sometime when I get things, some time allows, maybe coffee here or something with courthouse employees and the board, stop by and get to visit with him because he'll be your new best friend. Help me out with security. So if you have any questions for Brian, please ask now, or you'll get his cell number, I'm sure, and you can talk to him as well. So,
I thought you were in Wymore for 37 years, Brian.
No. It seemed like 37 years.
It did seem like 37, yeah.
I think I know most of you from a non-criminal or traffic manner, so keep it that way. And
him, even.
And if you have any questions or concerns, please bring it to my attention. It'll be a pleasure to work with you and work for you. So thank you very much for this opportunity. So,
welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
And I know that this was a position that we've talked about for some time, secondary to, we go way back and we did an assessment secondary to the bomb threat that we had,
yes,
the false thing. And so there was a whole assessment, Homeland Security. We had a lot of people coming in and looking at things. And I think this was probably one of the simpler, easier steps to make to help to improve the security. So this isn't new. Obviously, we've talked about this for some time. It just was took a while getting here.
That's correct. And NIRMA is glad to see these actions being taken. I know Columbus is about a year ahead of me on this, and Seward is just about 6 months behind me on this. So I think you'll see this as time goes on across the state. A lot of the counties, they just realize it's just something that's going to have to come to pass. So, yeah. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right, let's talk about another wonderful thing is diversion and probation. We have our friends from probation and diversion, Christina Lyons and Sarah Rini. We talked about this a couple months ago about trying to get a better handle and understanding of exactly how that system works and what our responsibilities are. I know it seems like the only time we really talk is when we're putting budgets together, and we thought maybe we should civilize the conversation a little bit more to get a better understanding of what we're doing and not always talk about money, but maybe understand the programs better. Yep.
Diversion serves both juveniles and they have done that for about 20 years now. We've had a juvenile diversion program in our county. As you can see from the handouts that I have passed you, we serve anyone under 18 years of age when they're charged. I just had a phone call this morning. A juvenile who is being charged as a juvenile. Today is her birthday. She turns 18. So that is kind of a fuzzy line there. But mostly MIP is what we see. Assaults, thefts, criminal mischief. During that, about 6 months is what I hope that they complete that time. And they have to complete 20 hours of community service. They have a four-week class, which is about 2.5 hours for 4 weeks. We usually do those on Wednesday nights, and the parent or the guardian has to come with them to do that. Like I said, we've done that for about 20 years. We've changed it a little bit here and there. Of those 20 years, I think I've taught that class for about 16 now, been a part of that. They have $200 enrollment fee and $45 court costs that they need to pay as a part of that. And we try to use evidence-based programming, meaning that we work with the offender and work with the offense and try to make it the most meaningful thing to them. If they're a low-risk offender, we certainly don't want to put more stress into them and get them more involved in the legal system than what we need to. Currently, we have 24 juveniles, and during the past 3 years that I've been in this position of facilitating, we have 115 juveniles that have been dismissed. Our adults are 18 plus, and I've had all the way up to, I think, in the gentlemen in their 70s on diversion for different things, so it's just not a young person thing. The majority are misdemeanor offenses, MIPs. I get a lot of kids from the college, SCC, but I do have some felonies. Diversion program is mostly for first-time offenders, but Rick and Amanda and Roger and his office do a really good job of, plugging them in if it's appropriate, and we make it work. They have to do 40 hours of community service. They have a class counseling or some kind of curriculum that I work with them through that's appropriate for their offense. Could be a domestic assault, or it could be that they have criminal mischief and there's a victim in the offense. We try to do some victim offender mediation, try to work with them and get them the restitution and things like that. They also have 6 months and a $200 enrollment fee, $48 court cost, and we work with evidence-based programming in that program as well. We currently have 57 on diversion that are active, and in the past 3 years, we've served 412. Most all of those have completed successfully. There's a handful that have second offenses, or possibly they just don't take it as serious as they should. And so they return to the county attorney, and he refiles the charges. community service, all of that is, or most of that is within the county. Sometimes we have people from surrounding counties, and they do their community service, obviously, where they are. Cost savings to the county attorney and the county court. We used to figure years ago when I think Richard Smith was our county attorney, and we were looking at diversion cost and things like that, we used to figure a cost savings of about $300 per person that went through. That seems excessive to me, but I don't know about what we save for each person that goes
maybe
through.
At least when you figure the court time, personnel time, if they go through the system, usually end up in a probation situation. So in their case, those are way too much anyhow. So you defer that cost.
Okay.
Definitely. And the public defender and or court-appointed counsel.
Okay. It's a self-sustaining program with the fees and the grants that are a part of it. Community service, these are juveniles that come directly from the court. Usually they have had their opportunity at diversion, and Judge Tim most often is juveniles. And Judge Tim, they couldn't afford the fine or whatever it is, so he sentences or, you know, gives them 40 hours of community service most of the time. I don't see a lot of these kids, about 10 a year is all I see. Just so you think that I'm not dilly-dallying the rest of my time away, I just, other parts, other things that I do as a part of my job is director of Gage County MAPS, and we are the agency that watches over the Community Justice Task Force meeting. We do that monthly. We're getting ready to do another prescription drug take-back with the Sheriff's Department, and that's April 26th. We work with both the police department and the sheriff's department with compliance checks for alcohol, high visibility checkpoints when we do those. Haven't done one of those for a while, but maybe again sometime soon. And then all the media ads, things like that. I just did some for spring graduation, prom, things like that. The safe community designation is something that Beatrice has had for a couple of years now. And I fill out those annual reports and go to all those meetings. Different community events, we just try to stay involved. And we are also a big part of the Women of Faith, which is bringing a national conference to Lincoln in the next October. I also spend part of my time in the school and with the Extension Office at the University of Nebraska Extension. And that is a project that I have. It's grant-funded right now. We have 10 7th graders, 8 8th graders, and 8 9th and 10th graders. I meet with them once a week, and we do different life skills. These are kids who have been identified as disengaged learners for lots of different reasons. Could be their family. It could be whatever. I'm preventing them from coming to see me in diversion a little bit later, I hope. We have weekly meetings and monthly family nights. I facilitate the teammates mentoring program, and we have, right now we have 37 active matches, which is an update to that, and do recruiting, training, matching, maintenance of that events, work with that. And I can always use more male mentors especially, so if any of you have an extra hour in your week, I would appreciate that.
John?
with Beatrice Public Schools, we are working on an attendance or a truancy program that we hope to kick off next year. And I also do Boys Town consultation and observation with the teachers. There's the different grants that I work with, Region 5, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We're doing some bicycle safety in the community, distracted driving with Public Health Solutions. I'm a part of the Public Health Academy. I do strengths training and 40 developmental asset trainings in a lot of the schools, and working with so the diversion program that's starting in the four county area, Nemaha, Richardson, Pawnee, and Johnson. Member of Kiwanis. I'm on the Thrivent Board of Directors in Gage County United Way, and my annual salary is $44,000. I have a stipend or a grant salary with the $12,000 with the extension right now. And the $20,000 to $25,000 is what I use for activities. Most of that is grant-funded as well. Any questions?
Just a comment. I apologize. I'm shuffling papers here.
That's okay.
I know a couple years ago we asked to have in the finance committee to have the general fund dollars and the law enforcement expenses separated out. So I printed this off specifically, but I had to find it amongst all this. But outside of wages, the total claims this time that we're on that we on this claim report that we have was $271,000 roughly. And the cost to provide law enforcement for just vendors was roughly 26% of that outside of wages. So roughly a little over a quarter, probably a little bit higher when you figure in all the wages that it costs to administer law enforcement and corrections and courts for people not playing by the rules. So when we talk about what's the true cost, it's kind of that bigger bubble that's out there. It costs the taxpayers quite a little bit for people not playing by the rules. So... And obviously there's other things that come up, but I just thought that was interesting. As I keep track of that periodically, and I go through and look at that and say, you know, about 26%, and that's outside of wages.
Mm-hmm. And just to point out that diversion is grant funded and fee funded. It's not taxpayer money. Any other questions?
Where does the grant money come from?
Community Justice from the Crime Commission. County aid money in the past. Usually, in the past, it's been about $16,000 per year that comes into the diversion program. We used to have community service supervisor out of the police department.
So it comes from, like, fines and fees like that? Or does it,
you know,
or is it no, taxpayer money?
I don't know where
that is part, as far as the Crime Commission, part of that is federal monies that are allocated for the Crime Commission. They look at the grants from the various parts of the state and make decisions on where that money goes.
So it does come from taxpayer money, just not from our local taxpayers' money.
Yeah, there's no real estate taxes or anything like that that funds this program. And that was part of what was brought to the board way back when. That it would not be, and you know, we've adhered to that. And again, I would just point out, Christina is not just, I mean, you can hire somebody, they'll do the job 8 to 5. Christina goes above and beyond that with all her activities, and she's very enmeshed in the youth culture in this town or this county. And when we had an issue the first of last year, we had a lot of suicides all of a sudden. She got on it. We got some money, did some education, worked with the schools, who are another part of it that works very closely because she basically has an office down there, too. So in my mind, we got the best of all worlds there.
Oh, I totally
agree. No, I'm not
criticizing.
I
know that
I'm
she does a fantastic job, but to say that it's not taxpayers' money is not...
Just not local taxpayers. Right. It's federal money coming down to the...
Well, it's not money that we print here.
Right.
Right. it still comes out of our pockets, but it's just divided out differently.
And the investment of those tax dollars is so cheap in what we do and the people that we divert that could be bigger offenders if they didn't have that diversion. So I think the money that we save, federal, state, local, is tremendous, is huge for the taxpayer.
Yeah, if you didn't have programs like this, you'd just be locking everybody up, and then Doug and Gus would be a little busier. And
then they could have their new jail.
Which would cost the taxpayer money.
The enrollment fee, which each of them pay, then that helps fund you. That doesn't come back into the county coffers,
correct.
Right?
Correct. And that also helps pay for maybe other youth programs and things like that we do. Okay.
Learning supervisors. I'm Chief Probation Officer Sarah Rooney. This is Chief Deputy Michelle Luders, and we're going to talk to you a little bit about our services. I think we've changed so much even in the last 6 years, let alone the past year, that it's really good that we have the opportunity to talk to you today about our services. I think there's still a misconception in the community that what we do is we follow a probation order and we tell somebody to do these terms, and then that's it, and we send them out the door. As long as they are following those, we move on. But it's we are not just about accountability, we're also about rehabilitation. And, you know, we've moved through evidence-based practices, which focuses on the individual, not just the issues going on with their criminality, but also in their personal lives, their education, employment. We look at the person as a whole. We look at where their risk factors are, and we take that and we target it, and we apply the appropriate services to hopefully prevent them from coming back. In the last year, with the passing of LB 561, we have changed incredibly. We have added, well, we've got 8 new positions. We have 7 filled. We have 1 that's still open. So we've grown. We've grown a great deal.
LB 561, maybe.
Yes. LB 561 passed last spring. And what that does is it's a big shift in youth supervision. So cases that were previously with Health and Human Services, as far as on the criminal side of things, OJS, are now probation cases. So we are supervising a larger volume of youth. And then with that, we are also working with 3B cases. So there's been a huge shift in the system. And, you know, essentially we're doing the work that OJS was doing on a little different level. And Michelle's going to talk a little more in depth about that to you. She's my juvenile specialist. So I'll have her speak to you a little bit about that. We offer a wide range of services for adults at this point. We have a lot of different groups that we run, moral recognition therapy, which restructures decision-making, goal-making, so that they actually have something to work on beyond probation. We have several groups that we have running. We have DUI-specific groups, so people that have risk factors with driving under the influence come together for a specific group, and they discuss different topics, safety, and decision-making as well in those groups. And all of our work that we do is based around their schedules. We work very non-traditional hours. Most of our groups are after hours. Our drug testing is early in the morning to accommodate work schedules. We don't work 8 to 5. We're weekends, evenings, holidays. And all of that is to accommodate the people that we work with. They can't be successful if we're taking them away from their jobs or from their education to come meet with us. We're very involved in their families. We're involved in their homes. We were out doing home visits last night. So, I mean, we're very busy. We're very involved with these folks because you can't just treat one thing. You have to work on the big picture. You know, treatment services alone, the state has funded for Gage County probationers alone has been over $140,000 between short-term residential treatment, intensive outpatient, and outpatient services. So the state has put a lot of money into the folks of Gage County, and we help facilitate and supervise those services to make sure that they're being carried out appropriately. We have done, I've done a lot of work developing our drug testing program. When I first started, there was approximately 4 counties being tested, which included Gage County. I now have testing in all 11 counties, and I'm very excited about that because I really feel like drug testing is one of the backbones of what we do because it complements all of our other services. And as long as we can help keep folks sober while they're in the treatment process, they're more inclined to have success. We have done, just in Gage County alone, since last year, March of 2013, we have conducted over 6,000 drug tests on Gage County probationers. I have beefed it up. I have worked very hard to grow that program and to develop it. And on our full mornings, we'll have approximately 80 people through our office between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. drug testing. So we have a lot of volume. We were able to hire an additional drug tech through LB 561 because we are also doing more testing of juveniles as well. And we didn't have a very solid structure for testing our youth. So we have increased that as well in all of our counties. Currently in our Beatrice office, we house 13 full-time staff. So that's grown. We have 3 management there, 4 line officers. We have 3 support staff there, 2 drug technicians, and then a RISE specialist who assists with education and employment barriers. So we've got a lot of different folks in our office that can provide services. We also have contracts for relapse prevention and pretreatment services. They come to our office and provide that. This is funded through the state and through contract dollars, but it's a free service to our probationers. They do not have to pay a dime to participate in that. So, and we keep working to develop more services that are low cost or free for our probationers. Treatment is on usually a sliding fee scale depending on the providers that we're working with. We've worked hard to bring more providers to our office, particularly for evaluations, because we have folks with transportation barriers that still need the assistance. And so, especially young people with their families, it's difficult sometimes for a parent to get a youth to an evaluation. And so bringing them to us makes it a little bit easier for those families. We, like I said, our drug testing program, I'm very excited about that. We have ongoing training throughout the year for our staff of all different levels. So our last year has been focused on LB 561 and training in the juvenile venue. And that's been a very busy year in that regard. But we are always working to develop our staff to do a better job and to help the people that we're working with in Gage County. So I'm going to let Michelle talk a little bit more about the youth side of things. Well, she gets very excited about it. Yeah. So,
well, Mr. Bauman, as you wanted to know, LB 561 was passed last spring. A couple of important dates, and there may be additional changes to LB 561 with the current legislative session that's going on. But basically, last Sarah stated that that bill has changed how probation does work and how we will continue to do work in the future. Beginning July 1st of last year, any young person that was, if you will, deposed of or sentenced to Kearney or Geneva, the YRTCs, are released on probation. And those kids historically have been with HHS, OJS. So when those kids come out of those facilities, they'll be on probation, intensive supervised probation. Most of those kids that we've seen so far to date, there's only, I think, one Gage County youth that I'm aware of. We have some other counties or other youth in Saline County, but those kids are put on probation until they turn 19. Obviously, if they do well, we can ask for an early release on that with those youth. Another big date that came up was October 1st, and as of October 1st of 2013, any young person that not only is an OJS or like a delinquent offender, the status offenders, so those kids that are having problems going to school or if their parents are unable to manage them in the home with their behaviors, those kids are coming to probation as well. And so we have a wide variety of what we're covering now with those young people, and I know Roger's been busy with some of those truancy cases. We've had court hearings on them with those kids coming towards probation now. One of the things that LB 561 has done is provided additional funding for probation. Obviously, we would like to divert kids if we can, but in the event that those kids are not able to be successful through the diversion process or if their situation leads them to have more structure and more supervision, probation now has the opportunity to provide a wide variety of services for young people. Probation is able to place kids in out-of-home placement if needed. So if a foster home is needed, a group home is needed, if there's a treatment need for a young person to go to residential treatment, probation has funding through the state in order to support those kids and those families to be successful. We're able to put trackers on kids, monitors, electronic monitoring. As Sarah said, drug testing has increased with those young people. Family support services to assist families if they're having some dysfunction within the family. Intensive family preservation services so we can get people in that home. 24/7 crisis response. So if a young person in a family is having difficulties, we have people that are basically on call to get out there any day, any time of the day or night. Those services are able to be offered now once a young person is put on probation, but most importantly, we can do it at the pre-adjudication phase. So what that means is if Roger has a young person where they're not going to school, we can't figure out what's going on, and before we even, you know, get going, if the family agrees to allow probation to come in, we can offer services that are funded by the state to get in there early on, which could divert, similar to diversion, them going through the entire system. And so with that, for the month of March alone, and on average for the last 3 months, probation has funded about $3,500 to help provide supportive services for kids in Gage County. Early on, we didn't have as many kids coming through, but as we are moving forward, we are also transitioning kids from Health and Human Services. So we meet, I meet on a weekly basis with the folks at HHS. We talk about the kids that HHS still has that are the law violators or the kids that aren't going to school, because those kids will come to probation. And right now, total, there's about 25 kids when you look at the law violation cases and the status offenders that we're looking at us taking over those supervision by July 1st of 2014. When we look at LB 561, I know I just read something yesterday that there's been another change, possibly with the absenteeism law that is looking at, and so there will be continued changes with probation and how we serve youth. And as was mentioned earlier, we have the ability to utilize crime commission dollars that could also help support the process when kids come in the system on a juvenile intake. And I don't know, are you guys all familiar with the juvenile intake process, or do you know what that is at all? Okay, so what happens is you know, the sheriff's department will call us at 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning and say, hey, we've got little Johnny that has stolen a vehicle or whatever the situation is. And so we get called and we have to do an assessment on whether or not that young person is safe to go back home, stay in the community, or whether or not we need to look at a possible detention of that youth. What we have the ability to do is put in what they call detention of alternatives. So instead of paying the $300+ a day to put a kid in the Lancaster County Detention Center, which is funded by the county, we are able to put monitors, or the county has the ability where we could use funding to put like an electronic monitor on a kid, or utilize a shelter option for placement or something else instead of housing them at the detention center, because we know that is not a cheap cost to the county by any means. We do have the ability in Gage County. We do a great job of getting kids in usually the next day, and if we can come up with something to have an alternative so they're not detained for a long period of time, we do that. And I am, so far today, I believe we've done a decent job of getting providers at court when we have kids that we need help with, so that we're able to start services from the beginning and not have a gap or a delay in services. So there's a lot of information with the juveniles, and any questions that you may have specifically towards them or what has come up with those?
I know you do work with the mental health agencies also, Region 5 Systems and Region 5 Services, yep, in order to get services for these individuals that need, yep, that also. And we need to continue that relationship that helps one, yep, another.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have a volume potential question here with legalization of marijuana in Colorado. Communication with other probation districts or areas out, mm-hmm, west, can they, if there's an increased volume, can they transfer probation coverage? Can you say, well, I'm from eastern Nebraska, so we're going to transfer their probation if they're caught?
Yes.
So, well, there is a potential, and I'm not assuming everyone in the eastern part of Nebraska is going out there to partake in their free, mm-hmm, will or whatever, but there is potential that what happens out in western Nebraska could trickle this way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, because we have Gage, folks from Gage County. Now, the thing is they would be charged in whatever respective county they are arrested in, of course. But if they reside here, that case through probation gets transferred to us for supervision. And then we provide all of the services that we would provide to any probationer. They become our case. So, yes, that's a potential.
I mean, the population base is in eastern Nebraska, so, yeah, mm-hmm, if assuming that.
And, yeah, and it happens all the time now. I mean, we supervise, they're called inter-district transfer cases, and we supervise a lot of them. A lot of it occurs due to employment. So we transfer some to Lincoln. Lincoln transfers some to us. It just depends on where people are working and where the jobs are. So that tends to happen just because we are more populated down here. There are more jobs available in this general area, not just Gage County, but Lancaster County. So we see quite a bit of cases coming in due to that. So, but yes, there is a potential that we would have an increase.
Mm-hmm. I've seen stories, mm-hmm, about, I read stuff about Western Nebraska dealing with people transferring. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I-80 is a nice thoroughfare.
Absolutely.
Unless they're stocking up for the summer. We don't have, it's a $300 fine. So we don't see probation unless it's a repeat offender, mm-hmm, or it's a larger amount of marijuana.
Yeah.
The problem we have down here, being so close to Kansas, is we do have people come up here and misdemeanor, yeah, stuff. Kansas will take a transfer, and I don't believe we will take a transfer from Kansas.
No, there's
on misdemeanor stuff.
So, not on misdemeanors, I mean, no.
There's still some areas that,
yeah,
they got to work through it, and sometimes we can, sometimes we can't.
Yep.
The felony stuff, I think you can pretty much work that,
yes,
out, can,
yep,
you?
Questions? I think it's valuable, again, that we have these conversations, mm-hmm, periodically, because I know most of the time you think, well, you got a probation, you go there, you commit, you know, go through these 15 steps, and then you're, and it's a lot more dynamic, and, mm-hmm, there's a lot more services out there. It's pretty complex.
Well, I would invite all of you, you know, if you want to schedule a time to come to our office, I would be happy to talk more in depth about our services and give you more detailed information. And there's other legislation that's on the floor right now that stands to impact probation quite a bit. So, and we could also talk about that as well. But I know we've got limited time today, so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's talk tourism. Chief Bruna. We're not sponsoring any bus trips out to Colorado, are we?
Well, that was something I was going to ask about.
Hi, I'm Angie Bruna. I'm the new director of Gage County Tourism. I started this position in December after Jim Spangler resigned. I have my histories. I've been working at the chamber for about 4.5 years now. It will be 4.5 years in June. So I've been in the organization for a while, and my role has just changed. Since this is my first time being here to present, feel free to ask me any questions and guide me on what you want to hear from me when I come back in the future, too. I did pass around a packet of information regarding lodging tax funds that have been collected thus far for 2013-14 fiscal year. In January, the actual 4% that came to Gage County was $5,692.94. Of that, 2% goes into the visitor improvement funds and 2% goes into the promotions funds. So that'll be about $2,345 per each fund, which is down from last fiscal year. It's about $700 down. If you look back through the months that are there, it averages out. We've had a month that was a couple thousand higher than the previous year, and there's some months that were a little bit lower. So if you add it all up, it's very close to where we were last year. The average for our last 7 years is $52,800 a year that comes to Gage County to run the visitor improvement funds and then into also the promotions funds. So that's exciting. We'd love to work on ways to grow that. Laura, the chamber executive, and I have been meeting with all the advisory committee members one-on-one to talk about strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats for Gage County and tourism in general. And I would love it if I would have the opportunity to meet with each and every one of you individually, too. So that's my little plug. I'll be calling you to do the same thing. Our ultimate project, we want to set goals that are short-term and long-term, develop a marketing plan that we can draw more visitors to Beatrice in Gage County. We have Homestead National Monument in our county, which is very exciting because it's one of 5 national parks in the state of Nebraska. So that's a big deal, and we really want to capitalize that and promote that once they're here to see that, then all these other wonderful things that you can do in our county include visiting the different towns and planning day trips around that. So that's some of the stuff we're working on coming up. Gage County Tourism is an active member of Nebraska Travel Association, the Nebraska Association of Convention and Visitors Bureaus, Southeast Nebraska Travel Council. I've attended a couple of those meetings already, and at my first one they said, "Do you want to be treasurer?" And I said, "Okay." So I will be more actively involved with that group as much as I can. I think there's definite potential with the regional approach that not only is Gage County great, but there's a lot to do in our Southeast Nebraska area. I'm also an active member of the Heritage Highway 136 Association, where we plan things along Highway 136 that comes right through Beatrice. Coming up in August, they're working on the Trail of Authors. And then in October, we have the Trail of Treasures, which is kind of like the junk jaunt that goes up through central Nebraska, but we do it across Southeast Nebraska as well. Some of the other activities that I've been working on this weekend, I had contacted Dan Crawford with the Speedway Races to ask if there was anything I had needed to assist with for Spring Nationals. And there's also a 4-H BB gun and air rifle competition in Beatrice that same weekend. So it'll be a very busy, busy town this weekend, and put on your happy smiles and greet anybody who looks lost and help them the best we can. We put out 210 visitor packets for those BB gun and air rifle competitors so that while they're here and in between their shoots, they can go explore and have an idea of what's here. I've made contact with the Nebraska Firefighters Association. They have a conference coming in May. We are currently, the advisory committee reviewed and discussed yesterday a grant application for the Visitors Improvement Fund from Beatrice Community Players, and I believe I'll be back in a couple weeks about that. I've been conducting SWOT analysis with all of the advisory committee members. I've been working with the brick mural on 5th Street. Part of my funds for my position come from the chamber because of the partnership we have with the chamber. So some of the projects I do will overlap a little bit, but that's one of them I'm working on with signature brick sales and prep work for that. The goal is that we will do the mass unveiling during Homestead Days in June on Monday, the June 9th. I've been working with trying to establish goals in the plan of work, with setting short-term and long-term goals. We have an events calendar online that if I hear of things that are coming up, if I get postcards, if I'm looking through the newspaper, I pull that and put it on. It's at beatricechamber.com. We've created a Homestead Days Facebook page. We've got an active Facebook page for tourism in Gage County. So find both of those, like them, follow us. And I'm going to be sharing a booth at the Spring Expo in February with Main Street Beatrice. So, and that's the 29th of March. So there's been a few things going on, I guess, and I'm always looking for ideas and opportunities to enhance and grow Gage County tourism. Any questions for me?
I have a question you probably aren't directly involved in, but since you're in the same building, maybe. What about the popcorn stand? What's the progress on that?
They are doing their grand opening on May 1st. So,
answer my question.
Yes. Watch for information. We have some postcards. The information is on the chamber's calendar. So,
that'll be there on 5th Street, too.
On 5th Street, May 1st. I think it's at 5 o'clock. So, they'll have popcorn and some other activities planned.
Any questions?
No? There are a few of us probably remember buying popcorn at that popcorn stand.
All right. Yep, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Give me a motion to place the report on file, please.
So moved.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Vote 7-0. All right. Looks like the last stuff we have has to do with law enforcement. Oh, we got employee handbook. talk communications. Any water? Drink. Anybody going to be very verbose? I know there'll be a lot of conversations, and there should be, but let's on the agenda says discuss and approve or disapprove county communications work group / committee proceeding with the statewide or simulcast system. So basically what we're going to be deciding is to give this group the direction to go this way or this way, and then they're going to continue to feed us with more and more information. So as the agenda, we'll start off with just discussion. So Deputy Klaus, if you want to, Chief Deputy Klaus.
Chief, Sheriff has conveniently left the room. I made some packets up, and some of the information that's in here.
We can share.
Okay. Roger, I met with him yesterday, and I know that in our committee meeting that Mr. Hill had brought up, the thought of some of the stuff to do with contracts, agreements, and some different things that we haven't got to that point yet. And I guess the top page on here was more or less my notes as to kind of some things that we have done since the committee meeting met on Monday for the Law Enforcement Committee. So I guess it's kind of whatever. If anybody has any initial questions right off the bat, we could cover those. If you'd like to go over some of the bullet points on this sheet, we can do that. And
maybe just
kind of whatever you'd like to do.
Just brief introductions of those folks in the room, because I know we've seen some of them at some times and other times. Those folks who are here directly or indirectly related to communications who have presented before, could you just stand in case we had, and just your name, just so if we know you're here, if we've got a question, folks would know who to direct it to.
Sure. Mike Jeffries, Office of the Chief Information Officer for the state.
Doug Ostergaard, First Wireless.
Tony Casiva, Motorola.
Okay. Thank you. So if there's questions specific to those gentlemen, just call those out. Thank you.
And the sheriff does have your back now.
He does. It says so right here. I guess initially, so we met at the committee meeting, kind of just an update as to where we were at. Mr. Hill brought up some of the stuff about the agreements and stuff.
So after the committee meeting Monday morning, then I started making some phone calls. I talked with Mike Jeffries and Doug and Tony with Motorola and First Wireless, and Mike was able to provide us with a copy of the Lincoln County contract that they used. Ours would be similar, he said, and I can let him expand upon that, you know, any more. If the vote was to move forward and approve the statewide system, the next step that we would need to proceed with is, my understanding, would be the notice of intent to participate, and that is attached in your packet. Those two documents I took to Roger, along with if the decision was to move forward with that, the next step would be that we would have to put together a purchase order for the initial subscriber units, which would be the mobile and portable radios and accessories. Then I kind of broke things down a little bit below that, because the overall project gets a little bit confusing, and the total dollar estimate that we have listed there, the $820,000, we have to break that down a little bit separately, because not everything is going to be through Motorola that we do, so we couldn't have that amount be the total with Motorola for just the radios. That is just for the subscriber units, the APX 7000 portables, mobiles, and then the accessories that are listed there for the 470 amount. After I met with Roger and kind of badgered him a little bit yesterday to see if he could have that reviewed before today.
A little bit?
A lot. I did badger him a lot. And then I came back at 5 o'clock before he left and badgered him some more. But then met with the sheriff, updated him on the status of our radio proposal, showed him the documents, and kind of brought him up to speed as to what we had found out up to this point. I think some of the things for consideration and discussion, most of these are all, you know, as many as we want to discuss, are obviously if the funding option, what those would be, what people have found out and what we could do with that, what the next steps are, what we have to do to move forward, training, implementation of the system. I think that we've done a lot of work up to this point, and I don't want to minimize that there's been a lot of people that have been involved in this. But really, if we haven't really begun to scratch the surface yet, if we're going to do something, there's a lot more that needs to be done. But we need to, I think, break it down in realistic, small steps that we can proceed with one step, then to the next, and implement that as we go, so that we can move forward in this in a logical fashion and not get too overwhelmed and lose sight of where we're headed. Those amounts there that you'll see are, again, the subscriber units amount. The Blue Springs Tower site, there's a whole lot of discussion that needs to be had about that at some point here if the decision is to move forward with that. There will be a lot of different agreements and different things that some of those kind of listed down below. The additional considerations are Bruce Lang from the Chief of Police was here last meeting and discussed the purchase of the consulate for the $10,181. Before we can do anything with the consideration of Wymore, if the direction is to proceed, then there needs to be some discussions between, you know, the entities involved in this, with the county board, the city council, different things, the police department, our office, Mike Jeffries' office, Doug with First Wireless. These are just kind of what we initially figured that they would need. That amount could change based if they think that they need one more radio, one less radio, however that might be. And then that's kind of figuring some of the accessories that we specified for our equipment needs. User rate to be determined, that's that. Some of the unknowns that we have out there are in-building coverage. That's the main one that I could think of. There might be some other ones out there, I guess, but if they're unknown, I don't know what they are. Maybe these guys can expand a little bit more as to what they would be. You know, currently with the system that we have, the UHS system, we do have some in-building coverage issues currently. Does that mean that they'll go away? Probably not. There probably will still always be in-building coverage issues. but we really can't identify those until we have a system in place to see that with the Blue Springs Tower, if that site, when that's up and running, how that would improve our signal, such as at, maybe at the hospital, the courthouse, schools. Any time you have a facility with a lot of steel and brick, it does, radio signals do not like to go through that. The last bullet point on there is, and it's in the purchase agreement with Motorola, they have agreed that they would provide us with the deployable incident command center and an APX 3000 portable radio. What that is in a very simple nutshell, it's a portable repeater, which is basically in a Pelican case or a suitcase on wheels that we can take to events with us. If we know that we're going to have a sustained event, such as maybe the fair or Adams Tractor Pull, you know, Pickerel, picnic, anything along those lines, or if we would have a situation maybe at the courthouse or a school where it's going to be an unplanned sustained event, that we can set this up, plug it in, and we can either work offline or I think, am I saying this correctly, online, is that correct, with the state system, which would basically not, I don't want to use the word guarantee, but it would ensure almost, you know, 100% good coverage for the end users that are involved in that event, to each other and or to the system. Because those have typically been some of the things that we have faced. Anytime we have an event at Cortland, we had problems. Blue Springs, we had problems at that event down there. And then, like, across the road from each other at Adams at the Tractor Pull. Those are just some examples that we've had. But so that's what I have up to this point on that sheet. The second sheet is the agreement that we would have with Motorola for the initial subscriber units. The RF combiner and some different stuff for the tower equipment would be after that, that we would have to get with Mr. Jeffries. He would specify what equipment is needed. You know, we do the tower remediation and stuff to become hooked online to their system. The next series is the intent to participate or notice of intent to participate with the Office of CIO and NPPD to be on their system. And then the last document is the contract with Lincoln County. Everything up to this point, I think that you've got copies of that include the amounts and the different things that are on this front sheet. I just wanted to kind of simplify it onto one page as to where we're at for just a real simple overview.
So really what we'll be voting on today is just to give the group again final authorization to go down one road or go down the other road. And we're not voting for expenditures of dollars. Obviously, we're somewhat implying that we're going to spend that cost. We've seen the cost comparison. We're going to spend over $800,000. We know that. But the recommendation we're getting from the group seems to go down the state road. But we ultimately have to, as the board, authorize them to do that. So at this point, we're kind of, I won't say in limbo, but we need to give them the final direction to continue to get us this information, so as we're moving forward and making those decisions and putting processes in place and having Roger review agreements and contracts, we can start to get that process going.
It looks to me like on the second page here, you are asking for a signature to authorize the purchase of the radios.
Matt, I'd like to.
Doing that.
Yeah, if give me. I'm
being a little bit of a gambler here, but I was trying to do is speed the process up a little bit. So in the event, because I didn't have eyes on the agenda yet at the time that I did this, so that the agenda came up, if it was approved, if that was part of the motion, we could do that. If it's not, and it waits till the April 2nd vote, then that's what it is. Roger has the documents ready. Opportunity to review him. So if it moves that direction, that it's all that work is done. And if not, then I guess it's, you know, I just was trying to get ahead a little bit.
I'm really glad that you didn't use the acronym for your deployable incident command.
It is bolded, but it is not.
Nice.
Yes. Thanks.
Just out of clarification, Matt pretty well already covered, but just out of clarification, what we'll be doing today is we'll be voting either to direct these people to go towards the statewide system or to the simulcast system. there still will be the option, even if we choose one of these two to move forward with, there still will be the option after this day to not do anything at all. So what we are doing today is saying, okay, we're looking at going this direction, start putting everything that's going to be end game down on paper so that we know what we're voting on in the end. So there'll still be two options after today's decision. This is by no means a final decision, and there won't be any final decisions come out of here with signatures or anything of that matter.
Today.
Just for clarification.
Yeah, and that is the thing I know I've talked to Myron about is you know, the third option is to do nothing and accept the fact that there's gaps in coverage and do nothing. We can save $800,000, do nothing.
And obviously, a lot of counties say they have gaps in coverage now. At least that's what they relayed to me at the district meeting. And a lot of them are looking at a system, none of which indicated they're at a point where they're decided which way they're going or how they're going. And I think, you know, at some point in time, we need to do something. I'm not sure I'm at a point where I know which direction we're going.
Well, yeah, and I fully appreciate the fact that there are the seven of us sitting here, and I'll throw you in, too, and throw you under bus as well. None of us here are communication experts. I admit fully that we're relying on the folks and the experts that are out there to give us that feedback, and those who have been here before and those who are here now. So, you know, we're relying on the information that we're being given and the needs that are out there.
You forgot about our communication expert sitting over at the communications. Well,
I didn't lump him in because he's got his own system, so he might be the closest thing we have.
That's right, exactly.
So, but yeah, I think, you know, good points, good information we need. So, any further discussion or questions for any of the folks? Yes.
I just make one additional comment, and I know in the documents that we provided you up to this point and stuff, when we had the comparisons between a simulcast system and a statewide system and the dollar amounts that we have figured in there best we can up to this point, that I had talked to Mark last week and stuff too, that one of the things that it's out there, but we really haven't considered it and talked about in dollar-wise because we don't know those amounts is that the additional tower sites that we would have to put up yet. Now, those are unknown as to where they would be, how much they would be, if we were able to utilize an existing tower, and to what the rent on a typical tower would be for a month or for a year. Those are unknowns for that part of that system yet.
Does that fall under what, as far as estimates are concerned? It's not in there? It's on top of the 820?
That's
for the simulcast system. That was given
okay.
Everybody previously.
All right.
We don't know what those would be yet.
That'd be on top of the 810.
Yes.
Right.
Typically, an amount for a tower rent is $1,200 to $1,800 a month, sometimes depending upon where, or nothing. if they agree to let us do it, but there's a whole lot of paperwork, even if you would try and move an antenna from the Cortland Water Tower where it exists now to the new water tower, there's a lot of paperwork that's involved, and it's a lengthy process. It's not just simply we can't just move it from one to the other if that's what we, you know, I mean, it's more involved than beyond my scope of expertise.
Yes, Kathy.
I've got another question. I've had several people ask me, with the new cell phone towers going up, why can't you just use your cell phones?
Well, that's a good question. We could, in theory. The problem is that, you know, if you're in a situation, well, first of all, let's touch base on a cell phone. And I don't know if everybody has a cell phone. If they do, if everywhere that you drive within the county or that you go, does it work all the time? I mean, do you ever drop a call? Those are issues that we face every day when we use our cell phones while we're working, because if we have information that's sensitive, that communications, what they will do is they'll tell us to 1021, which means to call the station. So they can't say it over the air. They shouldn't say it over the air because they don't want the person to hear it, or it's sensitive information that shouldn't be broadcast out for the public to hear. We call in. There's a lot of times when you have to wait till we get to a hill, or you have to wait till we get to a certain location, and then we can call in. If it's involved during incident that is intense or in the middle of a confrontation, it's not just that easy to get your cell phone out of your pocket. If you have your cell phone passcode protected, which you should, and then you have to either put a 4 or 6 digit code into there to get it to open up so that you can even call in and then dial whatever number it is. I mean, you're talking about a time frame of, 10, 20, 30 seconds to get that call initiated. Or if you can push a button on a microphone and, get help coming or do whatever it is you need to do is almost instantaneous.
And that's what I told them, but I wanted you to say that publicly, so.
Sure. That's a good question.
We have at least the other three gentlemen in the room that have taken time out of their day to come here. Is there anything else you think we should know? I don't think anyone's going to ask you any questions, but, again, I appreciate your attendance here. Anything else you think we should know?
I was just going to actually add to that, using your cell phone.
Can you just come forward? For the records, we're on a public meeting, so you have to just
come on up, Tony Casiba.
Tony Casiba with Motorola again. That is a question we get all the time. One of the things that you talk about is obviously dialing the cell phone, doing, waiting for that connection versus the push to talk. The thing that you see is when you have a mass incident, there's 200, 300 people, and they're all, what are they doing? Trying to update Facebook or Twitter or dialing home to tell everybody they're okay. Well, you busy out the system. You don't want somebody that's posting a Facebook update to make it so that an officer can't get through for a critical call to get help. And that's what a public communication system does. It is for officers, for public safety, for that type of incident versus just a general communication system. So,
thank you.
Mike Jeffries, State Office of the CIO. I just wanted to reiterate that I think you're asking all the right questions. This is a good packet of information, and it sounds like you're getting a good grasp of all the issues that are involved. So.
Doug Ostergaard with First Wireless. I just wanted to expand on a couple things that Deputy Klaus and Tony were discussing. But very good reason to have radios versus cell phones, you've had instances where officers have a gun drawn. You can't dial a phone with one hand. You can reach over and key a mic with your unoccupied hand. There are instances where this is the biggest selling point for two-way radio, I think, is where you need multiple officers in the field to know what's going on. So Deputy Klaus says somebody pulled over. He's talking to dispatch. Things go bad. Another deputy 10 miles away hears what's going on and can immediately be en route to provide backup, that sort of thing. It's the ability to push the button and talk to multiple people at one time that I think is the biggest reason to have two-way radio, as well as some of these other things we've discussed.
Maybe the man down button you could explain.
Right. The radios will be equipped with a man down button, emergency button, big orange button on top of the speaker mic or the radio. Press it. If worst case, you get shot, you're down, you can't talk, hit that button, boom, it's in an emergency signal back to dispatch to signal that, officer 9030 is down and needs help. Dispatcher knows where his last position was and can dispatch help to that. So it's that immediate contact with everybody at one time that is vital.
One of the things I've heard is that, you can be in the same area, whether it be NSP, Nebraska State Patrol, Sheriff's Office, maybe a local law enforcement agency from the city. You guys can't talk to each other. I mean, basically with a cell phone, that's not going to happen at all. One of the reasons we're trying to resolve this issue, isn't it? So that everybody can talk together.
Yes, that's true. That is one of the reasons, we're going at the statewide system as opposed to building your own. Yeah, you'll be all on the same network, same system, basically via changing channels or patching. Some of that's directed via the dispatcher, but yes, by changing channels, then you can talk to those other departments. Correct. So yeah, not only do you have push to talk to your own group, but the other departments as well.
From our standpoint as a county attorney's office, that was very surprising to me that we could go out on an emergency situation, SWAT team, whatever the case was, and we had law enforcement people that couldn't actually, I can see you, I can't talk to you
right
over my radio. That's like.
Correct.
I guess this question is probably for Mike, but
Didn't the Nebraska State Patrol have trouble communicating with each other in June of 2012 in Alliance?
They did, mostly due to they were in the middle of two different, I'm going to use some radio jargon, code plug versions, which is the programming that goes in the radio, all the talk groups, all the features in the radio. So the patrol has gone through several iterations, and you have to grow into this understanding of what type of programming scheme fits your operations. So their operations were simply mismatched with their radios and their understanding how to use the radios. Almost everything involving that incident, which also included local law enforcement because a local law enforcement officer was shot, I believe a deputy. They didn't all have the same communications, but the primary issue with the State Patrol was the challenge of training. That was the number one issue. But also it's compounded the problem by having that difference in multiple guys showing up with different versions of programming in their radios. So,
and the State Patrol at that time would have been 3 years into the system in the western part of the state?
They were, a couple years into the system by that time, as a statewide, the challenge with a statewide agency, too, I don't want to make excuses for why people make mistakes, but, hey, we make mistakes sometimes. But growing into a brand-new system and settling on how that fits the entire agency. The patrol operates as a statewide agency, not Troop E operates this way, and A and B and headquarters, if you're familiar with all the troop areas. The goal is that they have the same programming scheme among all troopers because they could go anywhere, any moment across the state. So they all have the same programming scheme. Their training is based on their troop areas. I dial into this talk group. This is my dispatch talk group. This is my secure talk group for this troop area because I work with this group of guys. I work with these dispatchers. But, in fact, they could go statewide. So getting settled into that common operating template, very challenging. Took a while. They're getting there. Not 100% there yet, but they're getting there. So those are lessons learned.
And the grievance that the State Patrol has against the statewide radio system is still ongoing, right?
The grievance, that is, I believe, put on hold, is the way I heard it. And that's between the patrol lawyers and the patrol administration and the troopers union. We're not involved in that whatsoever. So the outcome of that, I'll speculate at the risk of speculation. The training issue was a big concern. And now there's a lot of attention being focused on training. Phase two training, if you will. First, the basics. Here's how you use the radio. Here's the functions of the radio. Now let's get into scenario-based training. We've been very involved with the State Patrol at this. So that training is going on. I think they're waiting to see the outcome of that, which I'm going to guess the outcome is going to be positive. Any system like this, and the buzzword is a trunk system, and even more complex, all the features that are supported by a trunk P25 system, which is all digital, 100% digital, a lot of features that are just absolutely nothing like the old system. So I think the outcome is going to be positive. I couldn't even guess how they're going to resolve the grievance, when it'll happen, et cetera. So.
And the reason it's been placed on hold is they're making progress, but they're not where they want to be? Or
I think they're hopeful, and they want to see the statewide results, I think.
Okay.
And, yeah, I think that's fair to say. So, sure.
Mike, or possibly Doug,
sure.
Monday morning when we were discussing this, Supervisor Byers had a good statement or a good question, I think, is we've discussed this several times, but I think it's good to point out the fact as to why we are at the point that we're at, what kind of created some of our gaps in coverage issue here, and it all comes back to the narrow banding that the federal government mandated that had to be done.
Yes.
And the what the bandwidth was more or less filling up, and we had to create more room for more bandwidth, is my, I'm again, not a communication specialist.
Basically correct. We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely. But anyway, that was question, and the question that Mr. Byers brought up was, why don't we go backwards? Why don't we go back to what we had before? And, you know, I guess the fact is there's no way to go back at this point, or the federal government isn't going to allow you to go back because that bandwidth just isn't there in order to go backwards. We need to continue forward with making this work.
That decision was over a decade in the making, and they even pulled back the deadline for years. So everybody had plenty of notice, basically. Did everybody act proactively? No, and sometimes you can't act proactively on that narrowbanding issue until you see the result of it. And I know you're not able to stay on a couple of water towers, I believe, as well. So, but every system has its lifespan. And it's not that a UHF system, simulcast, what have you, is a bad thing. But I know you're faced with the challenge of, do we improve that system? Because you certainly could. I think that's been clear to everybody. You can certainly improve that system. And what it costs to do that versus... the approach I try to take with any transition's a good word into this system, because not everybody moves on to a system. And if they do, not everybody does at the same time in the same way. Well, you have a transition here. Not everybody's going to move off UHF. So you still have to look at that. How do you strike that balance with your officers that would come on this system possibly, and still keep that, keep those capabilities in the cars, the ability to communicate? So we've discussed that with the police department and your sheriff's office and your former emergency manager, who I heard has just come on with the State Department of Roads, and we're kind of happy about that. But so I'll continue to work with him, but I'll leave it at that. I know you're not happy about that. But sorry, side trip. But a lot of good work's been done up to this point, and I think you're getting the information you need. By all means, I think we're all here to answer those questions and just be very open and transparent. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I have nothing to sell. I mean, there's a lot of issues that we look at coming into this system. I would suggest that you look at the...
And are you saying we can't go back?
You could go back. You can't go back to the way it was. You would have to fix a lot of things. You would have to find new tower sites. You would have to invest in that infrastructure. The way that the sites was connected previously, I wouldn't recommend doing that today. I would recommend interconnecting those sites through network and not just wireless links through radio, which were also narrow-banded. Not only were your radio links narrow-banded, your repeaters were narrow-banded. Your radios were narrow-banded. So you have that wham, wham, wham. Everything's narrow-banded at once. So
you're saying basically we're going in the right direction.
You're going in the right direction.
I think you said,
yes.
I heard you say right. I was supposed to know this a decade ago.
Well, all of us knew that deal with this public safety business and FCC licensing knew it was coming for a long, long time. But that doesn't mean you can plan for what the impact is going to be. So let me backpedal just a little bit and say that you really couldn't know what the impact was going to be unless you invested money in coverage modeling and because coverage modeling is only as good as the assumptions. You could have had some idea that you were going to have some kind of impact on that system. Did you exactly know what it was going to be? No, you couldn't. The reality is once you narrowband, then you know, and you go, oh, it doesn't work as well as it did before. I mean, there are ways to plan for that, but I go back to every system has its life cycle. We tend to think of this system as a 15-year life cycle, and that's how we draw up these service agreements. Well, when's that 15 years start to become 12 and 10 and 7 and all of that? But so you're getting involved with us on this system really at the beginning. This is all very new to us, too, and we continue to improve our processes. We came up, I would suggest that you look at this intent to participate pretty closely, because this is our attempt at being as transparent and open and plain speak as possible. We can get into a lot of radio jargon, but if you just read through the steps, it really is a 1-2-3 step process. Step two is very daunting, though. There's a lot involved in step two. There's a lot of detail behind every one of those A through however many letters we have here. So we wrote this up so that we could basically broadcast that we do have a structured process to get there. But I think, like Doug was saying, your chief deputy, we're just at the tip of the iceberg here. We've identified some very chunky items, tower, what it costs to remediate a tower, estimates, radios, et cetera. Maybe the police department upgrades their console eventually. That's a big component in the functionality of radios, console system. We can use a radio for the time being. Long term, we like to see a console solution, so that's yet to be discussed. But it's been discussed. You're aware of it. And if and when the PD comes on the system with their users, you know, there's a way to do a predictable, structured, stable transition to a system like this. I like the fact that we're discussing it that way. Doing it all at once, usually too much change at one time is just too much change at one time. And those are a lot of the lessons we've learned with our agencies coming on the system. Huge change. The learning curve's like this. It's almost vertical. Now it's starting to become like this. We're seeing a lot of positive signs that the most difficult issues have been when there have been lots of people converging on a scene at the same time without specific procedures what to do during that incident. The individual guy driving around, I almost always hear, yeah, system works great. I don't have any problems. So I'll just kind of leave it at that unless you have more questions. I
remember very clearly not that many years ago when I was on the Communications Committee of the Nebraska State Unicameral Legislature, where we were trying to get phone service that would connect around the state of Nebraska.
Yes.
Phone systems that did not connect in parts of the state. And that's not very long ago.
Yeah,
and now we're looking at a system to connect everybody to everything, and it's affecting us here in eastern Nebraska as well.
Yeah, that reminds me of my former life in the Division of Communications. So basically, I never left the DOC. I was with patrol, moved to the DOC, and now we're CIO, and you're probably very familiar with that. You know our CIO, Brenda Decker, I'm sure. Yeah, I used to manage all our cellular contracts. So, yeah, that takes me back a little bit, too. Yes, sir.
We won't go into those details.
All right.
Could you just quickly maybe cover how the relationship between the state and NPPD works? I had a board member bring that up as a point of possible concern in the relationship as to how the partnership is set up, or if it's 50-50, 60-40, and expand on that, and what happens if there's a conflict between the two entities? How does it become resolved?
Yeah, we're basically joined at the hip inextricably. What we did, since the state was looking at doing a statewide system for a long time, actually, and then we got the green light to proceed with a funded RFP, NPPD had been interested for some time, and there had been previous discussions. Well, as circumstances happen, everything lined up, and it became a joint effort to start actually writing the RFP process with them involved. Well, at the same time, we started working on the language of how our operating relationship would work so that the our side and NPPD side and the attorneys could work out how does it work legally if we're sharing all this stuff. It is a 50-50 ownership. Now, that's in regard to the Motorola system. We share a lot of tower sites with local agencies as well. But the relationship we have with NPPD is taking our state network resources, NPPD's network resources, and our IT personnel, and they work together on things. The network transport for the system is dedicated to the system. The sharing with the Motorola contract is a shared ownership of all the RF assets, all the radio frequency sites. So you've heard some words like combiners and RF racks. It's the stuff at the tower sites. We also have shared ownership of two master sites. The master site does the call processing, kind of like a cell system. All the call processing comes into our data center in Lincoln, does all the call processing, and goes out to all the other users in the system. Nebraska Public Power has another fully redundant master site, so that's our backup. If something happens in Lincoln, everything rolls over to NPPD's site in Kearney. So the interlocal agreement, and there's also an operating agreement that we have with NPPD, really spells out the groundwork for owning, operating, managing, upkeep of the system. We have countless discussions, have spent thousands and thousands of hours together, literally, just developing that relationship. And the interesting thing about that is, well, for one thing, since Nebraska is public power, which is sort of unusual in the country, there really weren't any impediments for us to join as if they were a private entity, and then we got to get into a bunch of different issues. But since we're both public agencies, government agencies, we had the means to do that. So from that relationship, utilities do their business very differently than public safety agencies, very, very differently. So we had to come up with a cost model, and it's called the contribution model. But that's when the bean counters, the financial people got together and they decided, well, how do we maintain consistency? Because a rate that I quote you should be absolutely no different than something Nebraska Public Power quotes to an utility. Well, so we accomplished that. So we definitely have a mind to continually stay on the same page. They have to answer to their board. We have to answer to others, like the governor, our users, our customers. We operate public safety agencies or our customers. We're not, we could be viewed as dictators, though, but we don't like to be viewed that way. We like to be viewed as people are our customers. We have a very broad statute that we consolidate communications on behalf of state government. And that gives us a lot of authority to create a consolidated system. But the expansion of that system, adding other agencies onto that system, is also a very transparent process how we work with Nebraska Public Power. Adding a site like Blue Springs is not necessarily of interest to NPPD. It is to us because, for one, I have to look out for what serves Gage County. Not only that, what serves Gage County, is it beneficial to the system? So you're constantly doing those iterations in your mind and to arrive at this is a good step forward and this is how we're going to do it. So, and the same way with how NPPD brought Lincoln Electric System on the system. There's a lot of discussion about towers and frequencies and radios and operations. So I guess For the purpose of your sheriff's department, there's going to be ongoing discussion. This will never, ever end. You're embarking on something that now, it's good that you pointed out, what, these public safety agencies couldn't talk? No, they couldn't. There's been a lot of good steps we've taken so that people can, but that's still a work in progress. And even bringing everybody on the same system doesn't mean they're all talking. You really do have to work out a lot of the resources that you define, because how does a deputy know to flip over to what talk group to talk to a trooper, go through dispatch, patch, et cetera? So there's a lot involved in getting there. And I know I've sort of really ventured off from your question about how we work with NPPD, but I really want to paint a really kind of a big picture on how big this picture really is. It even gets into how we're going to connect with our neighboring state systems. So it's pretty big scale stuff. And then I come full circle back to you guys. Well, do you guys work with agencies across the board in Kansas? And how is that going to affect where you're going? So we try to think about a lot of different issues to really come back to, is this the right fit for you? If so, how do we make it functional for your users on a daily basis? And so we support each other very much, us and PPD, with all of those issues. Which brings me also to the system user group. Very, very important group to us, because we not only have the system operating group and the system administrative group, which is how we and NPPD agree to do things together. The system user group is made up of all the agencies using the system. Whoever they are, state, local, federal, if you're using the system, we want your feedback. We need that on an ongoing basis. That's how we continually develop our procedures. And procedures is going to be one of those huge issues. For public power, when there's a power line across the roadway, what's the procedure? Does the utility person contact their dispatch? State Patrol dispatch gets contacted. Gage County's on the system. It's laying across 77. What do you do? Can that happen here, lay across 77? Imagine whatever highway that a power line is going to lay across the highway. So those are all issues that we're all growing into. Some things have happened where the interoperability side of that has gone well and proven itself. Other things haven't happened yet. That's going to teach us a lot more about how we work together. And I just see you guys as being very much a part of that. If you're on the system, you're very much a part of that. How can you not? Because it just creates another dynamic that we have to think about. That, in my firm belief, helps our state agencies grow as well. Because nobody's in the sandbox all by themselves anymore. It just becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. So I'll stop there.
It kind of is and kind of isn't our problem, but where does Wymore stand with this? Are they willing and able to buy their radios to get on the statewide system, or?
I've had no communication. They've not contacted me at all.
Very, very little communication has been had. I know that Mark went down there before he left, and he went to their last city council meeting, which I believe was the same day as the last board meeting that we had. And the mayor was not present at that meeting. I know he had a discussion, individual discussion, with the mayor and the former chief at that point. And then it was going to be discussed, is my understanding, at the meeting, but then they did not have that discussion because of the lack of the mayor at the meeting. We had had some discussion here previously in this amount of the $38,000 to $40,000 neighborhood, is that certainly we don't want to leave Wymore out of this discussion and what their options would be. That is something, though, I don't feel that we can really move forward with unless we make till we get to a decision on what we're going to do here. If it is, in fact, the SRS versus the simulcast or either way, then we have to have that discussion after a decision's made on which direction we go, because it will affect how we proceed either way with them. And whether we've made some comments and some things about, well, if Wymore isn't able to come up with $38,000 to $40,000, do we include that in our amount? Then we would have to have a separate agreement with the city of Wymore, you know, to how that would be repaid and over what period of time, or if they would do it individually. Then that involves a communication with Mr. Jeffries, because they become another essential user on the group that would maybe be a part of ours, but yet they may have a separate talk group. Then they would have to have conversations with First Wireless, you know, to involve speccing out. Maybe they don't want the exact same thing we're getting. Maybe they want this versus this. And so there was a lot of future conversations that would need to be had. But when parts of this current system come down, they will be dramatically affected. And they do have a contract with the city like we do to dispatch. So they have some responsibility that way. But we want to include them in this so that they can make a good decision.
And what Wymore has relayed to me is that it would be basically impossible for them to absorb this in 1 year in their budget.
And you don't have to decide, well, they're either on now or they're out. Because the way we look at any agency on the system, you're never really done touching your radios. You do need a routine update cycle. It's a computer with an antenna shoved in and a battery on it. So for every user that is on the system, since we're all really, like I said before, still very new at this, we're continuing to develop our processes. One of those processes is the regular annual life cycle update. Updates aren't always critical, but the point being that since Doug mentioned talk groups. Well, for a law enforcement agency coming on the system, what's a Wymore Police talk group going to look like? Gage County Sheriff talk groups. they're different talk groups, but that's all just another wrinkle in how to develop their radio program. And there's always an opportunity to do that. So the process that I'm referring to is something that will give everybody an opportunity to plan ahead. We know this is going to come up. Hey, we want to make some changes to our radio. This will be the right time to do it. And it can be just one of those things you plan for. So
I've got one other question. This system operating agreement with NPPD and OCI, well, we have a copy of that to review as to how it would affect us on this.
I believe that'd be a public document. It doesn't affect you. The service agreement is what you want to focus on, because that's the agreement between you and us,
right?
Our office and you guys. So if that's what you're referring to.
And I guess what I'm asking is, what if going down the road there's some type of dispute between OCI and NPPD? How that might potentially affect us down the road?
Yeah, that's a good question. I see that they're committed to this system just like we are. I don't know how either of us would walk away from it. I suppose one party would have to buy the other out, because we still need a statewide system.
Right.
So.
Okay. Discussion of questions? All right, I need a motion to approve or disapprove county communications, and I just called it the work group committee because I know there's folks that have come and gone, but this general group to proceed with statewide or simulcast system.
Need a motion.
I move that we approve moving forward looking at the statewide radio system.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Dorn. Any further discussion? Seeing none, vote. Six in favor of proceeding, one no. Hill is no vote. Everyone else is in favor of going with the state system. So there'll be more things coming forward, obviously, and regarding the state system, but I guess all parties involved have got the direction. Let's kind of head that way and keep the information, keep the good discussion and questions coming. If you feel like you need some information, obviously contact somebody and get that information. And
I guess I'm certainly not saying that I think it's the wrong direction to head. I'm just not comfortable. I haven't reached that point where I think I favor it over one way or the other.
All right. So we'll move on here. Two more things, and I've had a request for a point of privilege if anyone feels like, or we can jump right in. Myron, you've got the big iced tea there. Do you need to?
I didn't hear Myron say anything.
How long is the meeting going to go?
You don't predict that.
Yeah, I want a point of privilege.
Don't beat you to it, Myron.
I'm at that age where I never
real quick.
Let you
know.
Okay.
Ten thirty-eight. Let's reconvene. I guess we'll just have a discussion about the detention center handicap entrance. We'll start with that.
That's you. That's you. We don't have anything. We're just waiting on law enforcement. So I don't think maybe we really have anything today. We're still waiting on some estimates and stuff. Dave, you don't have anything really on the detention center. We're waiting on these guys to get some stuff for us, right?
I would like to listen to you guys. Not.
Oh, okay. I guess where we're at, and we did discuss it a little bit Monday morning, where we're at this point is just want to get with Gus and spend a little time looking at different things and seeing if there's viable options that are going to be feasible in order to go forward with them, or if we need to, put that on the back burner and look at something else to go forward with. I think that's pretty much what we discussed. Gus was out of the office on Monday, so we weren't able to discuss it Monday morning with Gus, but I guess that's the gist of what we discussed Monday morning. We really haven't moved along until we have that conversation.
I think it's a good long-term plan. It's just depending on, if it continues with the old house, and there's a lot of discussion on that.
Yeah, and I think while we all think that it might be a good alternative to building a new jail somewhere is to refurbish this and move along and make it a more modern piece of equipment, it might not be feasible in the end because we might be spending just as much money or close to and still have an old structure to deal with. So
that's why we felt with the courthouse, when we spent money on the courthouse, that I always felt that was money well spent. And with the jail, it's always just kind of a, we don't know what the future holds for that. So
yeah, it's time to figure out long term where we're going and what we're going to be doing so we actually have a good structured plan to move forward with.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Dave. And maybe it is a time when we need to look again at whether we want to do a bond issue to build a new jail, place it on the agenda, on the ballot again, and say, hey, this is what we've done since the last election. This is how much money we've spent. As we start looking at what we're going to spend in the future to maintain a non-facility, basically, do we want to move forward with a new facility? And we might want to have some more discussions relative to that. So let's be thinking about it as a board, and we can bring it back later.
I think that's a good point, Denny, because the fact of the matter is we're spending a lot of money over there every year, and it just, you compound that every year, and it adds up pretty quickly. And much as we don't want to go back to the bond issue and building a new structure, you know, it might come down to that. But, I mean, we just need to keep our minds open to everything.
All right. Next, I need a motion to approve or disapprove Gage County Employee Handbook.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Setzer.
Discussion.
Doesn't it look pretty now? All bound and a nice picture on it.
It's the old picture. It's the old roof.
Oh, wow.
I don't have a new one.
That tree's not there anymore.
Picky.
What is it? Sorry,
I'm being stinky.
The new one's paid for now. You can go ahead and use the picture.
Okay.
I guess Don and the other elected officials and Nirma and Pam Bourne and everybody else has put years in this, I think. And I think it is being presented today for approval. And if anybody has any comments or discussion on this, Myron, you look like you have something to say.
I'd still say it's kind of still a work in progress because we constantly get changes. So
absolutely.
We just have to keep amending it.
Absolutely. Because as insurance continues to change, other liabilities, and you think, okay, I've covered absolutely everything that can possibly come up and nobody can misinterpret or try and work their way around, and you find out that there's still something that needs a clarification or a change with the laws. But I think this is a really, really good document now. And, you know, when you look at how many pages, how the thickness that it's increased over the last ones, they've tried to cover every base that they can possibly think of.
An important thing in this book that we need to change is on page 77. This policy is in effect, and we need to put 2014.
Oh, yep.
Okay, this is a huge.
And this will be a page that has to be replaced because everyone will have to sign this, and then we'll put in a new page.
Right.
Okay.
And then we have to.
But you're right. It is.
If we adopt this, and each department, each elected official that signs off on this, they have to understand they are obligating themselves to following this as it is. Each employee, each elected official, each department head has to read through this, be familiar with it, and if they sign off and say they're going to do it, they're going to use it, they have to use it.
There's also the receipt in the back.
Will each of the employees have to sign this new? Okay.
As in the past, the last one they did, and then it was turned back in.
They're not grandfathered in.
No, I mean,
because
we have a new handbook
on it.
That so they understand the, right. what they read and what changes there are. And I also will mention, too, on the reporting of emergencies, we know we started that with Mark. We know we have to make changes, so that will have to be updated on our process, but that's kind of been on the back burner now for a while. So that will also, when it's updated, will be good.
One thing I would like to comment on, and I think it's a really good thing, is our no smoking policy. I look at Gus when I say this. It says any person, this also prohibits the use of vapor and or e-cigarettes or similar products on county property, buildings, facility, vehicle, or all owned or leased county property. And I believe that this also includes the jail.
Why we own the jail.
Yes, it does.
Why doesn't it?
It does.
I didn't agree to that to include the jail.
Then you can sue us because you take okay. cigarettes out of there,
we're
period.
We're not talking about it. I run the jail, so that's fine. I'll discuss it in committee later.
No, this is a building that we control, and we have the obligation if people get sick because they have nicotine or arsenic in their blood from that smoke, it is our obligation, and we're not going to do it, Gus.
Yeah, I'll talk to my committee. I have other concerns as well, Denny, that I'll discuss with them.
Okay.
One thing I noticed on the holidays at Labor Day, it says first Monday in October. Is that right? Or am I wrong?
September.
Which one was it?
Page 35.
Yeah, what was the holiday?
Labor Day.
I probably should be right.
September. It's the first one in October.
See, even though you can go through this how many hundreds of times, you still find stuff we can goof up on. So, okay.
Okay.
You're just trying to get an extra.
Grievance procedure.
That's wrong one.
Page 19. Back in 2010, the board took action to disallow the use of the grievance procedure in the handbook because that creates a grievance board, which I know the legal counsel we had at the time said this is not a good thing to have because you basically take the responsibility as an elected official and you're relinquishing that. And I still contend, you know, it's bad because, again, you know, I use her as an example. If you have an employee in your office that you discipline and they grieve it, that employee could be put back in your office because of the grievance board who's independent of the running and the functionality and the election of your position. This is a bad thing. So I've got to go back and find it because I know that's how we operated. Basically, there was a process where people could go through the process in this board for the employees that we're responsible for, not yours. Mm-hmm. You're party to this if you're going to sign off on that. But, you know, our resolution is in there from December 29th of 2010 that we are not, nor are our employees that are we're responsible for, part of the grievance procedure.
Right, yours is one grievance page, and ours is a separate.
Yeah, they have a grievance board. The others, and we don't. And so what I would say is we probably in the next meeting need to clarify because I think we can approve the handbook, but we need to go back and redefine because this board this was 4 years old now, almost 4 years old. So as boards change, we need to go back and see how we want to do that. But as it stands right now, there's a resolution from December of 2010 excluding the employees that we supervised from the grievance board, and that was based on Jerry Pigsley and legal counsel saying, why would you have that grievance board? You relinquish your rights as an employer.
But the elected officials wanted to continue to have another step for your people to grieve.
The reason that we chose, and Roger, you were
there was a lot. I mean, that's one of those compromise situations. Again, any way you look at that, somebody's not going to be happy. And that includes the employees that are subject to this. I mean, the last one we went through was it just didn't work. And it didn't work for a number of reasons. I'm not going to tell you what my position was because it was as an elected official, not as the legal counsel for the county. Because, again, NRMA wants you to have an appeal board, if you will, before somebody takes you to EEOC. I understand that, you know, but that NIRMA is our insurance carrier. They like to win insurance claims. And that's fine. I'm not making fun of them, but understand that's where they're coming from. So I agree with what you guys are saying. I think you need to really sit down with that and look at that whole grievance process. We just got to the point, I mean, we wanted to get something done. It's kind of like the jury sitting there. It's like, we're not going to have a mistrial, but I guess we're going to have something. And everybody had good points.
The point that was explained to me by Pam Bourne was the reason that they feel strongly about this process is that your employee comes on a local level and grieves. It doesn't stop them from going to the EEOC. However, all of this initial process is recorded or documented. If they go to the EEOC, then there is a comparison of what they're telling the EEOC versus what they said a year ago in our grievance board. He said that some of the cases that they've had, they have found there's been definite discrepancies. So you don't have a process here, you don't get anything documented, and they go straight to the EEOC, you don't have. That was their basis, or her basis. That's what she told us.
Yeah, I understand, and I think there needs to be and I guess grieve is a union term, but I guess we need to have a process where folks can bring forward things that they're not happy about. I mean, we need to know if there is a direct supervisor who is doing something to a subordinate. We have to allow that subordinate to let us know. They may have to leapfrog their supervisor because it may never get past that chain of command. So I think we want that relationship. My problem is the very last line, if we want to have, is step 3, page 20, the board's decision is final. That's the grievance board's decision. If that read, the grievance board, you know, they get a hearing and that recommendation will then come to us, I think it's valid to have an independent group look at that. Maybe they see it differently. You know, the more heads you get in a room, sometimes it creates chaos and sometimes it creates sanity. And so hopefully we would err on the latter and we would all be sane by having more heads look at it. Come forward, maybe we'll see something different, or maybe something's uncovered we didn't even see or weren't aware of. But I'm just going off the legal counsel we had last time, and from Jerry Pigsley, as the legal counsel said, you're relinquishing your elected responsibility as an employer when you allow that board, who doesn't hire, discipline, or do anything with that employee, make a decision.
Right.
But maybe it needs to say the grievance board's decision will be made available. But when it says their decision is final, they can basically override anything with employees that this board does if they grieve it under the current process. FYI, that was everything else. We have the call out policy from the highway department's in there too.
In there, that's all.
Any other discussion?
As Don said, this is a work in progress, and there's going to be, and this may be something, or is something that we need to continue to look at. And if you want to bring it back in 2 weeks, then that's fine. Or we can. I don't know what does. Does anybody else have any other suggestions? Because I agree that the grievance board, just because I saw it not work, and it was a mess. And I also understand that to have somebody come back and work in your department that has gone and cried to a supervisor and gotten their position back makes for very, very uncomfortable working arrangements. But again, I think as a whole, this is a great document. And it's something that's going to be changed and revised as we go through.
Any discussion? We have a motion and a second to approve as it stands, recognizing it's a living, breathing document, figuratively speaking, that we have to modify from time to time. Any further discussion? Vote. 7-0 to approve. That is it for every item on the agenda, I believe. There's nothing else for the Board of Supervisors. To look around the room, we will be adjourned 10:54.
Spoke with Nancy.